This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Matt Pauly continuing to hang out with you. So generally on Friday nights, we talk with Kevin Wheeler. Well, this is kind of, in a way, our Friday. This is this is actually like our only regular two-hour show this week. Yesterday, we did everything over at the Jackbox Sports Awards. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, we're done a little early. Thursday, we're done a little early. Friday, we're running the countdown to opening day show. So, Tuesday on a Friday, Kevin Wheeler joins us.
Good to be with you, man.
Yeah.
Happy Friday on a Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Friday on a Tuesday. But it's a good day to talk to you. And we were talking about this off the air a little bit. We had heard that Major League Baseball at the winter meetings had presented their findings about pitching injuries to teams.
Yep.
But that information was kind of being under lock and key. Today, various media outlets got it. It's 65 pages long. I've seen a lot of people write about it. Jeff Passan did a great job breaking it down on ESPN's website. And as I was reading it, I kept thinking about you because you are somebody who played baseball at a pretty high level. You covered Major League Baseball and you coach amateur baseball. So you've got a lot of different forces in your life that allow you to probably look at what was written today in a pretty unique way.
Yeah, I think so. And in addition, like, you know, the covering part includes countless conversations with active players, retired players, instructors, you know, doctors and scientists. Like, I mean, you know, these are topics, especially the topic of the arm for a pitcher has been a topic for a long time, right? I mean, Jeff Passan wrote his book called The Arm. What was that, like 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, so, and this conversation goes way back before that. This goes back probably at least 25 years to where people are trying to figure out how do we reduce the number of injuries or how do we lessen the impact of them? And the problem is the answers that are there are not the desirable answers to Major League Baseball teams. And I know people like to shift blame and they like to blame. It's like people like me that do what I do, like, you know, coaching amateurs. I don't coach pitchers, so, you know, it's not specifically me. But although coaching a team, I do handle pitchers.
Absolutely.
I do have to handle pitchers. I will say that my program that I work with, which is the Gamers in St. Louis, we are very strict about how we manage young arms. Our director, Matt Whiteside, is a former pitcher, former major league pitcher, so we play very careful attention. We do actually follow the recommendations of Dr. James Andrews. Most teams do not. But the point I'm trying to get to here is this all starts at the top. It starts with Major League Baseball teams, and major league teams do not want to do the things that would help this issue. because what they're doing, they've been so hyper-focused in, really, again, probably starting with Moneyball as a theory, with results. The results are what matter. Well, look, velocity works. It works. It's harder to hit something moving faster and spinning faster. It just is. And that's why everybody does it. And that's why major league teams have always prioritized it. Always. You know, back in 1989, Steve Avery was drafted out of high school as a left-handed pitcher. And he threw like 89, 90. If he threw 84, he would not have been the number one pick right in the draft. But he threw, for that time, what was very hard for a high school lefty. He'd get drafted by the Braves. He was in the big leagues pretty early. He was a part of the Braves dynasty rotation in the 1990s. But if he didn't throw 90, he wasn't going to be drafted at that level. And you know how we know? Because nobody who threw 84 was ever drafted number one.
Yeah.
Well, now instead of 90, that number is essentially 98 and above, right? If you're not throwing like that, you're not going to be drafted high. If you're not throwing at least in the mid-90s, you may not get drafted at all. And college teams now have some of those same standards. So it all trickles down from the top. And the criticism always starts with, it's the high school coaches or it's the travel ball coaches trying to make money. I'm like, no, everyone else is feeding the monster, and the monster is Major League Baseball. So if Major League Baseball says this is the standard you need to pass to be in our club, what do you think those kids are going to want to do?
Throw hard.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to, if that's the standard that they have to meet, then that's what they have to give them or their career's over anyway.
And I thought a really interesting point in it, talked to a surgeon, said with the technology, there's this belief that, you know what, you can just go get Tommy John surgery and you're going to be good on the other side. But the point was made, there's 20% of pitchers that don't come back out on the other side.
Not as well, right?
Yeah. So you do that, and if that number was more out there, maybe guys would not. But again, it goes back to your point. How do you go become a major league pitcher? How do you go make millions of dollars? How do you win a Cy Young Award? Like, how do you do all these things?
Compared to football. We know playing football causes brain trauma.
Sure.
It causes CTE. Does it stop anybody from playing football?
Not many.
Nope.
Very few.
not the guys that keep playing.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of, it might be as simple as, hey, this is part of the cost of throwing hard, and that's the cost, that's what it takes to play at the high college level or to play at the professional level. But I will say, you mentioned there are several interesting parts to this. Since we kind of already hinted at it, let's start with some of the amateur stuff, because, you know, I've been coaching, like, informally amateur players for more than 20 years. But here in St. Louis, with the Gamers, with All-Star Performance, since 2007. So I've been doing it quite a while as an individual instructor, as a catching instructor, as a head coach for a 14U baseball program. And we operate in a way that most programs do not. There are others that do, and we all bond over this because we joke about it with other, you know, amongst ourselves. But what we have to get Major League Baseball to do, this is where Major League Baseball has a role in this. They have to lay down the law on the organizing groups in youth baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And by the organizing groups, I mean the tournament organizers,
right?
Groups like Perfect Game. Perfect Game provides a valuable service. Kids get seen.
They're a little bit predatory at the same time,
It can be.
Yeah.
Listen, when you talk about those, I don't have any personal issues with Perfect Game. But yeah, they charge a lot of money. You know, there are a lot of things that go into that. I mean, they do it as a business. It's they're not doing it just for the good of the game.
And they make a lot of money.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But if Major League Baseball goes to them and says and starts putting public pressure on them, you need to start enforcing pitch counts in all of your tournaments, because they do in some of their big ones where they have people who keep score. And they track the pitch count, and you're allowed a certain amount per day if you're a certain age, and then you have to rest a certain number of days. They're called the Pitch Smart Guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of youth tournaments do not even check those things. I see it every summer. Because, again, coaching 14-year-olds, I'm watching 14-year-olds out there throwing 115, 120 pitches in a 7-inning game, and then the next game they turn around and they're playing shortstop. And the next, or they're catching or something. Like, the only way you can regulate those kind of things is from the top pushing down and saying, you guys, you need to enforce these rules, or we will not scout your events. We will ban our scouts from your events if you don't do this. And it won't cover all of them because there are a lot of local tournament organizers who don't have the infrastructure, who don't have all that. But you know what? Well, you know where the future major league players are?
In those events.
The big tournaments. Yeah. The big ones. And I'm talking about starting at 11, 12 years old. Because you'll see some of the biggest abuses at the younger ages because nobody's paying attention.
I would argue the moment the Major League Baseball decides to release this report, there is kind of a, I'm going to use the term moral obligation. That's probably a little bit strong, but there is almost a moral obligation. They present this information. Now you got to do something about it. I think you're right. It starts right there.
And you know what? If Major League Baseball doesn't want to go to the point, and I'm putting this, again, I'm putting a lot of the weight of this on Major League Baseball because they are the only ones with the power to change it. You're not going to tell a business you're trying to make money, go make less money or risk teams not coming to your tournaments and do that at the risk of your business just because we say you should. Major League Baseball has to have a stake in this. I would argue Major League Baseball should try to buy Perfect Game or start their own tournaments that they run all over the place and put in really strict standards. So which do you think people are going to want to go to?
Maybe go to that one.
And do you want to go to the Major League Baseball sanctioned events that are monitored, that are controlled by Major League Baseball, and it's not just for money? Which would you rather send your team to?
And like we're just going down the line. I think they got rid of the Major League Baseball Scouting Bureau a few years
ago. Yeah, they did.
So there's a lot of out of work scouts right now. You could rehire some of these scouts and put them in that, and those reports could then be sent to all the teams.
Here's the crazy thing is you could do something like that. Create competition in that space. Give people a healthier alternative, right? Because the best programs, if you put that out there and you say, "Hey, Major League scouts will only be at these events for high school players. They're only going to be at MLB-run tournaments. They're not going to be at Perfect Game. They're not going to be at PBR. They're not going to be at any of the other ones." And then you get into the college ranks and say, "Hey, guys, come with us. Do with us so we can fix this problem." And you get more of the college coaches going to those, too. The other tournament organizers will have to adapt and do the same kinds of things. And then you can start to make some progress. And here's the thing to me about Major League Baseball. The cost of doing this would be less than the cost of one starting pitcher contract going bad because of an arm injury.
Absolutely.
It would not cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. It would not cost that much. It just wouldn't. And the return over 10, 15, 20, 25 years could be improved arm health up and down the sport, which benefits Major League Baseball. But because we don't have a core structure in place, because everything's kind of localized or everything is done only by private entities that do not have Major League Baseball's best interests in mind, I'm saying Major League Baseball should be protecting their own business by expanding their business into the youth section so that you can have better control over how young pitchers are used. And again, you know, it's pitch counts, yes, but it's also like if a kid, I try to operate on a rule. It's not 100%. It doesn't always work, but like I try to operate on a rule. If you pitch game one of the day, you're either off in game two or you're a first baseman or you're a DH. You're not playing shortstop after you pitched in the same day. You're not catching and pitching in the same day. And it's hard to do because you have this other side. Right. You have players that don't want to sit.
Right. Parents that don't want their kids
to sit. And you have to be willing to tell them this is what's better for your player. And if you don't like it, go somewhere else, because this is how the smart people are going to do it. We're taking care of your kid. And you look at the youth baseball setup. So a typical weekend, forgetting which kind of tournament you're in, a typical weekend, you'll have two games on a Saturday. And then you'll have bracket play on Sunday, which could be one game, and it could be four games. You can have, and I've done this a million times, six games in 2 days. At what level of sports does that make any sense from a physical health standpoint?
It doesn't.
And some teams go into that with only 10, 11, 12 players.
Yeah, the most.
Because nobody wants to sit. Everybody wants to play every game. So don't go in. So my program, we go in sometimes with 15, 16 guys. I've got room to sit people. I have the ability to say you're not playing every game. And again, it's not always perfect. You get injuries, you're missing players, but you should try. But at no level of baseball do you ever play six games in 2 days.
The most is four games in 3 days when like some college leagues do a Friday game, a Saturday doubleheader, and a single game on Sunday.
But then that'll be followed by an off day.
Yeah, by 3 days off. Until
and also, those are grown men.
Yeah.
College baseball players, I got to break it to everybody. You may call them kids. Those are grown men. They're 6'2", 220. They're fully developed. They're working out year-round. They're not 12-year-old kids.
Okay, you said working out year-round. Just a couple other things from this. They identified more injuries coming between the start of spring training and opening day as opposed to once the season gets started. That's connected to these guys not operating correctly in their offseason.
Well, it's a combination. To me, I'm going to combine that with another topic. So to me, that is connected to the not training minor league pitchers to be major league pitchers.
Yes.
Those two things are the same idea, even though they're different things, right? So what happens is they're reducing workload so much in spring training that when you get to the regular season, you're not ready. But the games matter, so you're going all out. Right?
Yeah.
And yes, some of it is related to guys doing a lot in the offseason to try to improve, right? So, you know, you can't stay going to driveline, working on adding 2 miles an hour or increasing carry on your fastball or your spin rate on your curveball or tunneling, whatever. Like some of it's that because you're training. A lot of guys are training more intensely than they used to. But in spring training, you also don't get the number of innings that you need oftentimes. And then you get into the season and it's like, well, your last start in spring training, you threw 80 pitches. Now go throw 100. Well, you're increasing the workload 20%.
And you might be doing it when it's really cold outside.
You're doing it where you're taking spring training games, which are low intensity, and regular season games, which are high intensity. You get paid for those games and by how you perform. Your team makes or misses the playoffs based on those games. So you go from low intensity and not enough work to really high intensity and more work in a week. And then you throw that in with how minor league pitchers have been developed in the last 10, 15, 20 years, where you'll take a guy, and I'll use a Cardinals example. Tink Hentz has still not thrown 100 innings in a year.
No.
He's not had a significant arm injury, although he did have, I think, a shoulder thing this past season. But the idea that you're going to limit guys to 3, 4, 5 innings of work in the minors and 75 pitch outings, and then when they get to the big leagues, hey, we need you to go 6. And we need you to throw 100 pitches. And we need you to do that 32 times. You're training to run a 5K, but you have to run a marathon. It doesn't make sense.
We have been very critical of the Cardinals and their player development and everything going on. And that's why Chaim Bloom is here. And that's why a lot of new people are coming to the organization. One area that the Cardinals very recently shifted to and they got right is last year the Cardinals led all of minor league baseball in innings per start.
By their starting pitchers.
They started pushing starting pitchers further in the minor leagues, and that is going to pay out dividends.
Yep.
That's the
best news I've heard about like player development, the Cardinals, in a long time because it makes so much sense.
And hopefully this new group of people coming in continue down that path.
Yeah, and I mentioned Tink Hentz because he's an example, but that's not the typical Cardinals pitching prospect right now. You know, he might have specific concerns. You know, he had the shoulder thing this past year. He's slight of frame, so maybe that's why they've kind of gone easy on him. But that was just an example of what you see in a lot of places. But I think they're ahead of the curve on that, and hopefully they stick with it because by doing that, you're also forcing pitchers to not just go max effort all the time. You cannot tell a person not to try hard, right? You can't put a limit on velocity. You can't put a limit on spin rate that gets you the better breaking ball because that works. You can't tell a pitcher be less than you can be. But what you can do is put them in a position where they have to learn that that's not what they can do all the time. That's how pitchers have been developed for 120 years. That's how Bob Gibson did it, right? That's how those guys back in the day threw 350 innings because they didn't throw as hard as they could all the time. And the reality for 2024 is your best place to be is in between those two. Throwing harder, but not all the time.
And the last thing on that before I get you out of here, this was more anecdotal than them really having science behind it, but they made the point that the pitch clock may have actually been a good thing, not a bad thing when it came to injuries, because it forced pitchers to not be able to throw max effort every single time.
I don't disagree. Yeah. And by the way, even if it's not making it better, it's certainly not making it worse.
No.
Look, we all know what leads to arm injuries. It's effort. It's the amount of effort. And this applies to anything. Do any physical activity at max effort, you're at more risk of getting hurt. Compare a sprint to a jog. You're not going to pull a hamstring jogging. You will sprinting full speed sometimes. Every time you're working at max effort, you are at more risk of injury. We know this. It's a biomechanical fact. It's not the pitch clock. It's none of these other things. People will say it's the sticky stuff and they've got to try harder. No, it's still the max effort.
100%.
It's still the max effort, because if you put the sticky stuff on there, they're not going to try less hard. They're still going to try as hard as they do without it. They're just going to get a better result.
That's Kevin Wheeler. You'll be up on the Gas House Gang tonight with a special guest and Derek Gould.
Yeah, it was great. We had a great fun with it. I would highly recommend listening. We got a lot on Nolan Arenado, on the what if they get caught in between selling and rebooting and also competing. It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it's coming up tonight at 8 o'clock. Thanks for stopping by.
You got it, buddy.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We'll be back coming up in just a moment. Really interesting conversation coming up with somebody who's trying to help fans support basically minor league baseball players financially. I'll go through all that coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.